Hey everyone, before launching into the podcast today, I just got a quick announcement. We've launched our new fall menu at the Camp House. So you know us as one of the great places to gather and to have a meeting to over coffee or over a meal. And we just launched our new fall menu. So we got stuff like the buffalo chicken wrap, a salmon BLT, beef braised short rib tacos, a whole new range of menu items. Come in, check it out for your next meeting, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Thanks, and now on to the podcast.
And so the promise of Tech Town is that some kid from the West Side can come and get certified, can come and get some training, and deliver his mother from the projects in months, get a living wage job, and move to a different neighborhood, and just go to work every day like they always do. That's what I mean. And it doesn't require college. You don't have to go to Colgate and get a master's in English literature for that. This is something you can do right now. And so if I can't deliver for a kid that's been under-resourced, been told they can't do it, that they'll never amount to nothing, their life is worth nothing, if I can't deliver for them quickly, we're all in trouble. Somebody has to deliver for them. Somebody has to be a consistent adult in their life. And that's what we're seeking to be. We're seeking to deliver for them. Now, they got to do a lot of work. But I want to make sure there's some incentives out there that they can see that's tangible. Coming back to me and showing me their employee badge, to me, that's victory.
Cordell Carter is the CEO and Executive Director of Tech Town, a new technology and entrepreneurial learning center dedicated to inspiring the next generation of innovators, our youth right here in Chattanooga. In today's interview, Cordell shares the vision for Tech Town. Not only to be a place that fills a gap in our educational ecosystem, but to be a place that inspires and expands the horizons of what these children dream is possible for their lives. This is the Camp House Podcast, and I am your host, Matt Busby. Cordell, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about Tech Town. But before we get there, I just want to ask you, if you guys have never been to Tech Town's website, you need to check it out. And when you open the page, there's this phenomenal video.
Yes.
And so I'm really interested in who made that video for you guys. It's great.
Two local videographers. One is Summer Smart. She's here locally in Chattanooga. And another gentleman named Ben Botwell just relocated back to Nashville, but frequents Chattanooga quite a bit. We asked them to give us the Minority Report, if you remember the Tom Cruise movie. We wanted this people's brains to explode as we talked about the inspiration, the engagement, the education, the empowerment of Tech Town. That's our four-part strategy, our four-part philosophy, if you will. And they probably have done the best job that we could have imagined in representing that via video.
So, yeah, everybody, today's guest is Cordell Carter, and we're going to be talking about Tech Town. You know, Cordell, before we get into this new organization, this new nonprofit here in Chattanooga that focuses on technology education, mm-hmm. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about yourself, because you're not from Chattanooga. You've been here a couple of years now.
I've been a couple of years. I'm originally from Portsmouth, Virginia. As I tell folks, I'm the son of a soldier and a preacher man, all in one. So if I'm a little cranky some days, it's PTSD. Don't worry about it. we moved around quite a bit, but I settled in Seattle as a high school student, went to college out there, and went off to grad school and law school in different places, but Seattle is pretty much where I consider home, and came here from the Gates Foundation. Prior to working for the Gates Foundation, I was a lobbyist in D.C., working for Business Roundtable, doing education reform and National Alliance of Public Charter Schools, and before that, I was working in a school district. I was leading labor negotiations, all that icky stuff that people tend to throw those neophytes at. That's what I did. You know, fresh out of law school, really feeling myself. But my formative training came fresh out of grad school with the IBM Corporation 17 years ago.
So Tech Town, we're going to get into this in a minute, but it's focused on technology. But that's not really your background, correct? You're not a coder.
No. At IBM, I was a strategist, and I was how do you leverage relationships to move projects forward? At the time I joined IBM in 2000 or 1999, 2000, there was a revolution of a client server to the new environment, which was more cloud-based, that type of thing. This is the beginning of the cloud conversation. But the government was already there, believe it or not. The federal government was there, you know, almost 20 years ago, and they were pushing, trying to consolidate all these systems. And I didn't know this stuff, but they would say, hey, you speak English, and you basically know what coding is, so you go talk to the client. Don't let those technical guys speak to them. They're going to blow it for us. And so I was the tweener. I was, you know, you start off as a business analyst, and then you move up and be a project lead and became a project executive. I had an amazing time at IBM. I think about those 4 years very fondly because it helped me understand what excellence was and how the importance of having an answer, even though it wasn't the optimal answer, you had an answer. And the power of a 300,000 member company, you just had experts you can rely upon and you could depend upon your colleagues. Everyone was on it. It was a beautiful thing. And I've tried to recreate that every single place I've been. But so I came to Tech Town after not being engaged directly in technology for 12 years. But I understand the importance of using technology as this enabling mechanism to get people to feel better about their life chances and to change their view of what's possible by them to overcome their circumstances. And so our technology is used to get people towards empowerment. And empowerment begins with yourself. You have to start saying, I'm happy, I am empowered, before you actually believe it. And so changing belief systems, I'm doing the same thing my dad does as a minister. But I do it, my church is different. It's a 23,000 square foot innovation space. It looks like it's Facebook headquarters. You walk in, you hear music, you see colors, and it's all about just innovation and creativity and curiosity. So literally, it probably reverberates as you walk through. You should feel the rhythm. It's like that old SNL episode when the guys are bobbing their head as to what is love. That's what I want you to feel when you come to Tech Town. You know, with Chris Kattan and Will Ferrell doing that, what is love? That's what I want you to feel, that bump, 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 bump. But that drum beat is your own. And so that's what we do. We work directly with several Title I schools. There's five that are main partners. You have CGLA, Eastlake Academy, Howard High School, Orchard Knob Middle, and Orchard Knob Elementary. Those are our five learning partnership schools. And those 500 kids come to Tech Town during the school day. And so we're extending their learning experience. And so, for instance, if we know that Howard High School students are struggling in algebra, we work with their teachers and say, okay, let's do something in tech that they enjoy and kind of backdoor them into learning algebra. So we use Java for Minecraft modding. So a lot of people play Minecraft, millions play Minecraft. So we basically say, okay, great. Well, we have to teach you Java syntax so you can make your own objects in Minecraft. So we're going to make cheese because cheese can be made from dirt, and dirt is plentiful. So the more cheese you have, the more life you have in Minecraft. Oh, that's awesome. How do I make cheese? Well, you threw Java. Great. I don't understand Java. Yeah, we got to solve for X. And then you just start doing algebraic equations. You don't even say, hey, this is algebra. You said, this is how you make cheese.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they will solve for X with passion and then make their cheese. And then afterwards, you come back and say, by the way, you just solve for X. If you can solve for X, you can do algebra. This is why it's relevant. It's not just this discrete thing you're learning from Mrs. Smith and Six Bell. This is life. You can't play your game effectively without this stuff.
You know, I think all of us, so I was a history major, so math was never my strong suit, but and then that's always the critique. You know, that's the critique of everybody who doesn't like an educational subject. How does this apply to real life?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so putting them in that situation, I mean, it's like my mom when I was a little kid would take the medicine and break it open and put it over ice cream so I'd eat it.
Yes.
And you still don't even know, but you're getting better. That's great.
Exactly.
All right, so Cordell, you're the executive director of Tech Town, which you've begun to start to describe. My question for you is, so you're from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But this Tech Town was started in Chattanooga.
Yes.
So I'm very curious about that relationship. How did you end up coming here from Seattle? How long has this idea been in the back of your head? And why Chattanooga?
Well, as I was saying, I was in Seattle working for the Gates Foundation and in the education reform movement. The Gates Foundation is George Clinton's mothership. Okay, you get beamed up, and it's a pretty awesome place, and it's kind of celestial, and you see, you know, your movie stars, literally movie stars, walking around campus, and it's great. But for that 38-year-old Cordell who is hands-on, who likes to make things happen, it wasn't the best fit. So I was looking for something. And I happen to believe that if your intent is pure and you articulate to the universe what it is that you're after, that things will conspire on your behalf. And that's exactly what happened. There was a meeting at Social Venture Partners, a group that I was a part of, their education committee. I was busy that day. I was working for a client. I had just transitioned off of Gates. And I didn't want to go to the meeting, but I was doing someone a favor. Just so happened that the folks were there from Chattanooga, Tennessee, talking about this idea for teaching kids how to code. And I put on, you know, like the Gates hat, because social venture partners give people money. So you have to figure out a way of saying no nicely all the time. Mm-hmm. And at Gates, you have to do it 99% of the time. And so I was formulating my no when it dawned upon me that this person is describing a city. And he was talking about the gig. And he was talking about all the entrepreneurs and how the city is literally turning its wealth on itself and saying, we're going to invest in these young people because they are the future of the city. And that does not happen. In most places, the wealthy, the powerful, like to keep that amongst the blue bloods, like to keep it, like to control it. That's what they like. So this notion of inviting others in to leverage that wealth to build something for that city was just shocking to me. And I was really intrigued as I came here to visit once. I thought about it. I said, you know, we have an opportunity to change the narrative on the American South. And so, you know, the Tech Town was just an idea. It was like, we're going to teach people code and do summer camps and do a membership program. That business model was a non-starter. And it was a for-profit. And I got here on November 1, 2014. I said, the first thing we do, November 3rd, we're filing for nonprofit status. So you want companies to invest. They're not going to invest in an LLC. Okay? And so I believe in what you're doing, and I wouldn't invest. Because why would I enrich you?
Yeah.
Optically, it's challenging. And so we moved to a nonprofit, separated the organizations, and really went hard after it. And folks really invested in us. But here's why it's important for Chattanooga. Chattanooga is building itself into this innovation hub. And every innovation hub, you look, there's several of them, several dozen around the country. We know Silicon Valley. We know the DC corridor. We know the big ones. But every innovation hub needs a steady stream of talent. Or those investors are incubating companies for other cities that have the talent. Okay, there's a reason people are drawn to Northern California. There's 100 different universities there, okay, mm-hmm. and they're pumping out talent. And those professors, that work is aligned with the industry needs. I mean, they are moving lockstep. That's why people are going there in spite of, you know, $3,500 rent for ramshackle, you know, shotgun shacks, okay? And so if we aren't building talent here, and I really didn't see one like on that base saying, hey, this is the base I'm covering, I got it. I thought that was the biggest opportunity. And so we started our first year just with young people. We served over 5,200 kids in the first year. So between 7 and 17, we reached almost 15% of the school district in wow. just 1 year. And frankly, 6 months, because the work really didn't start until January of 2016. Even though we launched in the summer of 2015. So now we're looking at year two, we're moving to adults, workforce development. The city has funded us for do workforce development out in the community at the YFD centers, as has the U.S. Conference of Mayors have funded us. And so we're trying to build this pipeline from 7 to 70. So wherever you are in that age spectrum, that we have some skill-appropriate training that will get you to that next step. So you can make more decisions for yourself on what you're gonna do. So for kids, it looks like, I'll give you a great example, actually. One of our partner schools, it's an all-girls academy, CGLA. I was talking to their leader, amazing woman named Elaine Swafford, who does a tea, with her foundation funders every spring when the senior class graduates. And one of her funders said to her, and she repeated to me, Elaine, this is the first year that none of the girls said they want to do cosmetology. They all want to do tech. What are you doing different? I would like to take some credit for that.
Wow.
That we changed their notion of what's possible for them.
Yeah.
We don't know the environments that these young people are trying to overcome, but I can guarantee you they're trying to overcome something. And our job is to give them the tools, to give them some hope, to inspire. And so, yeah, there's a lot of tech. There's $1 million worth of equipment, but it's not about tech. It's about the people that use it and use it for getting themselves to the next step, the next level. That's what we're trying to do.
Well, you mentioned you split the foundations.
Well, there's Tech Town Foundation and there's Tech Town Global.
Well, what's the difference between those two entities? So are there more tech towns around the country?
No, they're not. The aspiration, I actually came here to run Tech Town Global. I was CEO of Tech Town Global and switched over to the foundation last May when we moved into our new building. And, you know, it was retroactive, the certification of the foundation that came, I want to say, late April 2015. And so we said, okay, we'll just do the kids at the foundation and the global, you all handle expansion and whatever. I can't speak to what the for-profit side is. I know all the people associated with it moved on. So we are continuing forward, and frankly, as opportunities come to us, I mean, but for the Tennessee chapter of the AARP, we probably wouldn't be doing workforce the way we're doing it now. But they came to us and said, listen, we need your help. We're trying to get these great, skilled seniors that, frankly, don't have a pecuniary interest. They have a mentor-like interest to work with these tech companies, but they need some foundation to switch what they were doing to get there. And I said, you know, I think we can help. And so that conversation snowballed into a much bigger proposal to the city and other entities that people have funded. And so whereas the Tech Town Global was going to do workforce, they didn't do it. And so we did it. Okay. I should say we are doing it.
So the first podcast I did in this series was with Jared Bingham of Chattanooga 2.0. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I feel like now, every time I do talk to somebody about something that is even tangentially related to education, mm-hmm. the question that's constantly in the back of my mind is this related to Chattanooga 2.0? Yeah. Because it's so it lines up so perfectly that it's hard to believe that this is a that the rise of Tech Town in Chattanooga at the same time that Chattanooga 2.0 is being formulated was serendipitous.
Yes and no, right? These efforts were independent of each other. I knew of the 2.0, it wasn't called 2.0. I knew we were somewhat aligned. I also knew this, you know, as a you know, former funder, you're always looking for ways of making your funding decisions better. And so you look across the city, you have about 220 or so nonprofits. And what Chattanooga 2.0 provides is a roadmap for funders that are essentially interested in the same thing. And so if you are not aligned to the outcome measures, to the goals of Chattanooga 2.0, I think that decision for those funders just became super easy. That essentially is air cover to say no to people you've been saying yes to for years. And frankly, we probably need a quarter of what we have now. Yeah. In terms of the nonprofits out there, there's a lot of two-person shops, fiscally sponsored things that probably shouldn't exist. They would do better as programs with a larger organization. And so in terms of alignment, I know we're spot on. Once I saw the outcomes, I smiled because I know what side of the dividing line that Tech Town is going to fall. And it's become a lot more difficult for folks that have said no to us to continue saying no if they are still aligned with these things. And so on the workforce side, one of the working groups for Chattanooga 2.0 is post-secondary and workforce development. Well, I got this workforce development work funded independent of Chat 2.0. So my first call was the Chat 2.0 folks at the chamber. I said, listen, I already have the program funded. I've already identified the trainers. Can you give us the outcomes? I want this to be your project, okay? I want to show complete alignment because if it works for these 25 underemployed adults from these two low-income neighborhoods, why wouldn't it work for every low-income neighborhood? We have 17 YFDs. We have one gig.
What's a YFD?
Youth and Family Development Center. And that's where we're going to be delivering some of the instruction with our proposal with the city. There's no reason why we can't stand in the middle at the floor at Tech Town with our 4K cameras and high speed and screaming and send it right to these YFDs so people can receive training without leaving their neighborhood using city infrastructure. That's the purpose of having this infrastructure. Secondly, our work with the schools. So our major products are, you know, you have our learning partnerships, which are deep, deep partnerships. You have field trips, you have expeditionary learning, you have after school, and you have summer camps and all that. All of our work around learning partnerships, everything we do is project-based learning, okay? So that is one of the major objectives of the K-12 working group for Chattanooga 2.0. And so if you want to give people more introduction to the workforce and jobs of the future earlier in their careers, we've been doing that since day one. So I know we're aligned on two of the three major working groups there.
Yeah, so project-based training essentially is what you were describing earlier when you were talking about teaching kids algebra through Minecraft.
Yes.
Instead of giving instruction on standards and giving a test, it's more of putting them into a real life situation.
Exactly.
Where they have to use the skills of algebra or whatever to be able to solve the problem.
Exactly. In fact, my education team at Tech Town spent all day yesterday at the STEM school. And so if you haven't talked to Dr. Donan, you got to talk to Dr. Tony Donan. Amazing over the STEM school. But it looks unlike any school in the city. The kids are in charge of their own learning experience. And that's exactly what we do at Tech Town. It's like, I'm not your teacher. I'm not going to grade you. You can do this or not do it. It's on you, friend. we call it student agency, this notion that I can't want it for you more than you want it for you. Okay, I'm not your parent. Okay, I'm here to facilitate. If you don't want it, I'll move to the next person that does want it. And that's what they do for an entire school. And these kids are having amazing results once they realize, like, oh, they're not playing. I'm really in charge. Okay, then I do want to learn these things.
Well, I know another part of Chattanooga 2.0 when it comes to the post-secondary education is credentialing itself. Mm-hmm. So do you have certifications in place for these sort of things? As adults begin to take your classes, go through your programs, are there certifications actually available for adults that then they can just put on a resume mm-hmm. that will actually help them get careers outside of this?
Right. So Mozilla has a pretty robust digital credentialing or badging system. Some of the partners we work with do as well. We are looking to leverage things that already exist. And so you look at teacher professional development, you have the Relay School of Education. They have these great little mini credentials that people can put like, hey, I did 3 hours of this, 3 hours of that. We haven't really set up our own yet. I love to leverage what's already there. It's just efficient. And frankly, I don't have to run the gauntlet someone already did. Yeah. And so if I can align our work to work that's already out there that's proven to be effective, that is my preferred path. We're a small team, and so taking time to create things. I know it's fun and that pride of ownership, but I'm like, no, we just don't have the juice for it, guys. We just don't.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
That's my preferred method. But the answer to the question is yes, especially for the adult work that we're rolling out. Part of the effort of getting Chat 2.0 stakeholders involved is that there are companies that have open jobs right now. And my only question to them is, do you see, here's a curriculum. Is this something that will make a person, upon successful completion, employable by your organization? If the answer is yes, I just need you to come and observe and interview these folks after they're done. Yeah. Okay? Because that itself, what makes a credential is that someone that has a job recognizes it. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, so have you had any organizations or companies come in and do that yet?
We're working on it now with this. Okay. This is our way in with this particular piece of work, and the chamber will be hopefully a great partner in that effort.
Yeah, and so the other thing that's really exciting about this conversation right now is that Tech Town is still really fresh. Like Cordell was saying, you know, January 2016 is really when it started full force. So we're still in the very beginning stages of this organization. Well, before we talk about the future of Tech Town, where it's going, both on a local level and is this something that's going to be scalable across the country? Mm-hmm. First, talk us through your programming. Just really briefly, because it's not just coding. It's not just you guys do a whole gamut of technology programs.
We have five program themes, if you will. We have software development, application development, coding, you know, that type of thing. And so our main languages are Python, Java. We use Scratch some, and we're branching out now. We have more professional development on jQuery and JavaScript just to get that whole front-end piece done. So CSS, HTML, and JavaScript. That's front-end development. That's what we're trying to make sure that the kids leave with that along that program stream. The next program stream is robotics. So the younger ones, we have them using Legos. The older ones, we move to MBOTs. We've also launched the Howard Robotics Program. And we're trying to set ourselves up to be the place, the main services provider for what we envision to be a citywide effort to get low-performing schools be very robust in robotics. I think it's just it's a great way of bringing in all these different disciplines, so algebra, physics, thermodynamics in some cases, all into one. And you can reach them young because the way you're doing it, you don't have to say, hey, this is algebra and this is calculus. You don't do that. Like, no, this is how you get a robot to move. Oh, you got to write a line of code for it. It's just a very easy transition for them. And so we want to be that place to do that. So that's our robotics program. And then you have circuitry. And so some will call it your basic electrical engineering. We just say, hey, this is how you make sensors move. And so from LED lights to something called little bits to even parts that we are kind of scrapping together with our Raspberry Pis and all that, we want a whole program stream around that. And then you have additive manufacturing. We have a bank of 3D printers. We use something called Lutzbox. And we want to be a place where you can go from idea to prototype in the same place. You know, granted, it depends on your prototype. It may take a long time to print. But it's just something amazing that happens to kids when they say, Mommy, look at what I made, versus this is what they told me.
Not just kids, as a parent.
As a parent, yes. That's awesome. Right? And then fifthly, we have our film. And frankly, film is our approach to literacy. Literacy is the basis of all learning. We read to learn rather than learning. Well, after you learn to read, you have to read to learn. And so where people are having issues, or will have issues at Tech Town, is they're not good readers. That, thankfully, has been a very rare occurrence. We've seen such growth year over the year. From summer to summer, there was one that I remember last summer. She had to have a coach with her. Her mother had a reading coach with her in class, and she was with us for 3 weeks straight. So I remember seeing this woman every day working with her, reading the assignments. This summer, she couldn't wait to read out loud in front of people and do her presentation. And so reading, expressing yourself with film, that's just a way of, because you have to translate to do film. Yeah. So imagine doing Romeo and Juliet and saying, okay, I'm going to make this Romeo and Juliet of Highland Park. Great. You still got to read Shakespeare first in order to translate it into your contemporary context. And so you're getting it twice to do your film. And we do that over, we just iterate over and over again. It's just, film is a very important medium. And then also this whole public presentation piece. No matter if you're 7 or 17 at Tech Town, you're going to have to stand in front of your peers, under the lights, in front of a camera, and present something you learn. It's just, it's our rite of passage. And everyone does it. Everyone, staff, everybody does it. And so you got to get used to it. And so get over yourself, and these are your peers. Just smile and just grit your way through it. You'll be fine. You'll be much better for it.
What are the age range right now as far as how young are some of the kids you guys are working with, especially maybe in your summer camp programs? Mm-hmm. And I know you're expanding into adults. Mm-hmm. You know, so what's the, just out of curiosity, what's the youngest person you've had, and what's mm-hmm. what's the oldest kind of student you've had to come through?
I'm almost ashamed to admit the youngest we've had because the parent did not tell the truth. Yeah. But we had a newly 5-year-old that just happened to be incredibly articulate. Aside from that first day when he had some separation anxiety, he did very, very well. In fact, he was leading the class, which is just odd. This little guy is going to be amazing. So we've had a 5-year-old. We typically start at 7 because of the literacy barrier and, frankly, the physical maturity. These are kids, and so it's rough and tough. There's beanbags everywhere, and, you know, someone's going to get pushed. It's just going to happen. And so you want them to be able to kind of take some of those blows and be able to give a few out. Just kids, right? So 7 has been a sweet spot for us in the building. Now, when we go to your school, I don't care how old you are. You could be preschool because we feel much better in your own environment. Your teachers are present. And so we can work with preschoolers up to middle school, whatever. It doesn't matter when we're at the school. We typically cap out around 17, 18. The oldest person we had was a 19-year-old. That was in with the kids. He had no, besides having a smartphone, no experience with coding or all that. So his skill level was equivalent with some of our younger kids. He just didn't have exposure. But we didn't have any issues with him being much older. Just, it was kind of odd that he would sign himself out and drive away. It's just so odd for us. We're used to kids being picked up where he says, well, can I go now? Like, I guess you can. You're an adult. See ya. So, but we're hoping, this was the coolest thing ever. We do these Saturday programs, these family days. And we did one last January on the Hour of Code. And so we use Java for Minecraft. And so we had these 5-year-olds on one side of the table sitting across from a 77 and 74-year-old couple. And they were former TVA engineers, had been retired for almost 20 years apiece. And they were teaching these old folks how to code. Now, I talked to the lady and this couple, and she was telling me when she learned to code 50 years ago that the computer was the same size as all of Tech Town.
Wow.
And I'm like, my gosh. And so it was this amazing intergenerational juxtaposition right in front of us. We must have tweeted that picture out 15 times because it was just so cool. It's like, well, that's the point. That's why we have this space. That's why we're located where we're located, to make it accessible to all ages, till we all get to that next level, whatever that next level is for us.
Yeah. Well, was this something we've been hinting at the entire time? I mean, just the existence of Tech Town hints at this, but there seems to be a gap within education, within the public school system, as far as education the way we've done it for 100 mm-hmm. years, mm-hmm. and then just this explosion of technology over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And the public school system just hasn't caught up to that. Mm-hmm. And so you see Tech Town as filling that gap, right? Like, I mean, you have significant investment in technology in your building, mm-hmm. and obviously there's no way every public school can do that.
Right.
And so that's not just a Chattanooga problem. That's a nationwide problem.
It's an industry problem. I like to look at the education workforce industry as one of your top 16 industries nationwide. National GDP is about $16 trillion. Well, government spending at all levels on education from K to 12 is $630 billion. Okay, so if you throw in higher ed, just the first 4 years of higher ed, you look at another $400 billion, about 380. And so you're now talking about a $1 trillion industry. There's 16,000 school districts, so that means 16,000 superintendents, 16,000 school boards. You have 50 state departments of education. If you count the U.S. territories, add another six to that. You have a state legislature that monitors that in the Senate and the House in every state, plus a federal help committee that Senator Alexander chairs out of Memphis that is involved. You have a lot of actors in a very, like that $1 trillion is spread pretty thin. And so the margin for innovation, it's just very minimal, even for privates. I mean, even though you have a big endowment, doesn't mean you can leverage it to build a technology lab because you got to sustain it. Can the endowment sustain that?
Right.
And scholarships. So there's a lot to think about there. And so essentially what Tech Town represents is a $3.5 million investment that was done very quickly that districts can't replicate because of their extended and dramatic and political procurement process. And so it doesn't make sense for the school district to replicate what we've done. It's far more efficient to just figure out how to get the kids there. And so that is how we position ourselves here. Now, that's just the K-12 piece. There's that still workforce element there. And the big disconnect between universities and institutions of higher learning, I think community colleges do a better job in this, is that they're not engaged with the quickly changing trends of the workforce. It's impossible. That's not their model. Okay. In order to get federal funding for higher ed, you have to get certifications on literally every single hour. They call it seat time. Okay. That's an extended process. That's why the course catalog doesn't change a lot. Why? Those things are classified. They're certified. They get funded for the number of kids there. But that model is the model of the College of Alexandria. Okay. That's three millennia ago.
Yeah.
And so, and I'll be frank here. If my daughter were to come to me and say, Dad, I want to study art. I said, sweetie, that's good for you. Let's go to Paris, and you can learn how to draw on the street. Do not go to college for that, because you are not coming out with a liberal arts degree is going to put you at a decided disadvantage and more debt. More, I have to now pay a lot of money. Now, if you study engineering, go for it. Why? Because you're learning how to learn. You're learning how to problem solve, and you can be taught anything. You don't have to understand coding. And then you look at the opportunity cost. So let's say the universities like Stanford, like, okay, we have all the money we need, and we want to put the top people in. You would never be able to pay coding instructors enough to stay at the university. The market for their skills is just too great.
Yeah.
And so it makes more sense to have a coding school that is neither a university or a tech towns per se. You know, it's not necessarily a nonprofit. It's a school. It's not like certified, but employers recognize their credential. Yeah. So it doesn't matter what the federal government says. I got employers that will hire these people. And so one thing I neglected to mention, that we're partnering with coding academies to bring the curriculum to Chattanooga to work with adults, because I hear from parents all the time, like, listen, I'm retired, or I have no interest in technology other than understanding what my kid is doing. And so do you have like a 6-week course I can take in Java so that I can play Minecraft with them? Just stuff like that. And so we have some tremendous disconnects nationwide that, frankly, at some point, if it hasn't already, going to really bring things to a head. I read a figure, I want to say this is about 6 weeks ago. If you look at Department of Labor, they do a vacancy announcement pretty much every month. And they do, you know, number of jobs created and vacancies. So the vacancy in technology fields is 3+ million.
Wow.
Okay? And so you just look at Chattanooga. Chattanooga is a town of 177,000 people. There are 2,500 open IT jobs. Right, and none of these are these new entrepreneurs. These are legacy employers. Those jobs are open right now. And so the promise of Tech Town is that some kid from the West Side can come and get certified, can come and get some training, and deliver his mother from the projects in months, get a living wage job, and move to a different neighborhood, and just go to work every day like they always do.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, and it doesn't require college. You don't have to go to Colgate and get a master's in English literature for that. This is something you can do right now. And so if I can't deliver for a kid that's been under-resourced, been told they can't do it, that they'll never amount to nothing, their life is worth nothing, if I can't deliver for them quickly, we're all in trouble. Somebody has to deliver for them. Somebody has to be a consistent adult in their life. And that's what we're seeking to be. We're seeking to deliver for them. Now, they got to do a lot of work. but I want to make sure there's some incentives out there that they can see this tangible, coming back to me and showing me their employee badge. To me, that's victory.
That's awesome. I can almost imagine, you know, like a business puts their first dollar bill on the wall. Mm-hmm. You guys just have a wall of employee badges.
Yeah,
That's in there. That'd be great. So, you know, you guys have been up and running for a couple of years now in Chattanooga. Uh-huh. And what's the future look like for you guys here in Chattanooga? And then, you know, what's the plans going forward? What's Tech Town going to be like in 5 years?
Well, hopefully there's a lot more of them. As I repeat to my board and staff probably, I don't know, once a quarter, my initial desire to come to Tech Town and Chattanooga and for Tech Town was to build a national organization. I model ourselves after Teach for America. You know, they started in one place and slowly grew, and now you have a permanently endowed organization. They literally live off an endowment, a $100 million endowment. And so what is our generation's Teach for America? I came here to have impact, to have massive impact. And Chattanooga is important because you've done big things of national and international implications for over 100 years. International organizations, brands are started right here in Chattanooga. And so when I come in and say, well, we want 100 of these in the next 10 years, people say, okay, I can see that. Let's get sustainable first here. And so in terms of use cases, Chattanooga is probably the most difficult use case. It'd been a lot easier to do this in Seattle, a lot easier to do this in D.C. You have more population. You have, frankly, a more educated, wealthier households. Just the average household is wealthier. And you don't have some of the same transportation issues. Yeah. Many of the kids we deal with, access is a real issue, not because they don't have cars. They have access to buses, but the buses don't come here from their neighborhoods. Wow. And so, and then because of the way the district used Title I funds, it's already dispersed and spoken for before the principal has an opportunity to say, this is what I need for my building. And so they don't have the flexibility that a lot of other districts will have, a lot of district leaders would have when it comes to like, okay, I want to use this for this because this actually drives my, you know, education plan for my building. And so we've had to constantly fundraise for things that have really nothing to do with Tech Town. We just want to be a provider of great things. We want to be great partners to our education customers. But we constantly have to think about things that are beyond our building, if you will. So when I say this is the most difficult use case, that's what I'm talking about. So in the next 2 to 3 years, we want to be sustainable here in Chattanooga.
Yeah,
I think this is home base. This is where this will be our, you know, Peoria, Illinois headquarters for Caterpillar. So everyone that does a Caterpillar around the country has to be trained here. The same will be for Tech Town. But the hope is that we're in at least 5 different cities across the American South in the next 5 years, that we have shovel projects.
Your focus is the South to begin with.
Initially. As I stated earlier, I'm very, very excited about this notion of rewriting the narrative of the American South. I think so much credit is given to the West Coast for reasons that have nothing to do with governance, have nothing to do with resources, but these things kind of compile upon each other. But this is not a place where you expect innovation to kind of live. And so I love that underdog story. And so I'm very, very excited and bullish, frankly, on the South, not just because of the weather and SEC football, although that helps. But I think as we get older that we start looking for quality of life. And I think the quality of life south of the Mason-Dixon line is pretty compelling. And, you know, I see beauty every day. I see sunshine 9 months out of the year, if not more, here. And that's just not something I'm used to from Seattle. And it changes my attitude about the day, just seeing a lot more sun. And you can do work of national import and go home and have a cocktail at 5. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You can't do that in other places. You'll be in traffic for an hour and a half coming and going. And that's awful. Here, you don't have to worry about that for now. And so I would like to extend that model to other places, the hope that these companies will decide, you know what, we do have a talent pipeline in Tuscaloosa, in Chattanooga, in Decatur, Georgia, in Nashville, you know, these places that they typically wouldn't go. I want them to at least have to think about it twice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other interesting thing about this too. Is, you know, Chattanooga's created this infrastructure of the gig that's attracting companies, but that's only going to go so far until the talent catches up to that. And so that's where you guys play a really key role as well, is increasing that talent pipeline for tech companies to be able to move here.
Yeah, that and one of the shames of typically what these technology ventures is that you typically do work with people that you know, or the people that fit a certain archetype. And what you miss are the people that are trainable and that could do the work just as capably. And so we have the opportunity of being kind of managers of inclusion, really going after Title I schools, hitting neighborhoods that are normally off the beaten path, and bringing this innovation economy to places it hadn't seen yet. But we'd be much stronger as a city, as a region, if everyone has opportunity to get hold of these amazing jobs of the future. You would have to import less, your costs would be much lower, and you would have a much happier populace if everyone saw what's happening downtown as part of their own inheritance as well.
So you've been in Chattanooga for about 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of, like, you know, you spoke to a little bit about the culture and the attitude of the city. Other than that, what is it that you love about Chattanooga these first 2 years you've been here? What's the one thing, if somebody were to come to Chattanooga tomorrow and you say, you got to go do this?
I love the Walnut Bridge.
Yeah.
The Walnut Street Bridge is probably my favorite place in the city. So you go to that, it's called the Ice Cream Show, and you get a smoothie, and then you just take your time walking across the bridge. If you've ever seen it at sunset or sunrise, I mean, it's purple mountain majesty that's happened there. Now, I'm used to mountains, 15,000 feet mountains, right? But there's something about that river and then those
the silhouette.
Little peaks. I mean, it's just a beautiful thing. And I've caught myself just sitting there taking photo after photo on the phone and just pondering life and all the things that have happened on that bridge, for instance, you know, and the water that goes in, the stories that are flowing down past me. It's just this very wonderful reflection that I get, this reflective moment that I have when I'm over there. So it's one of my favorite places.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here, Cordell. I'm so excited to see Tech Town going forward and hear more stories like the ones you shared here about the students. I hope to have you back sometime.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much to Cordell Carter for stopping in and talking to us about Tech Town. You know, this new technology education center that's not only teaching kids real technical skills, but inspiring them to imagine a better future for their own lives. And if you want to learn more about Tech Town, again, that website is gotechtown.org. There you can learn about all the different programs they offer, and you can read more about their vision, and really actually you can get a visual for what this space looks like in downtown Chattanooga. It's a beautiful space full of all kinds of technology. So go check them out at gotechtown.org. So I hope you've been inspired by this conversation. And if you've enjoyed this, please take time to share it with a friend. You know, spread the word about Tech Town and the amazing opportunities this is opening up for people in our community. And as always, thank you so much to the Lamppost Group for letting us use their studio to record this podcast. And thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you right here next week. Have a great day.